This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and you're tuned into the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. We live in an interesting time where the line between the real world and the digital world is blurred. For now, the intermediary of those two worlds is our gadgets: smartphones, tablets, laptops, personal computers, and many other devices. These platforms have become so synonymous to our way of living that we can't really survive without them. Unfortunately, these devices have a shelf life, and once that shelf life ends, they're usually discarded, becoming what we call e-waste. Now, it's important to know that, like conventional waste, e-waste too are not necessarily just trash. Some of the products that we throw away can sometimes still be refurbished and used again. And even if they truly can't, they need to go through a proper disposal method that is environmentally friendly. Managing e-waste is still a relatively new thing here, but there are organizations out there taking the mantle to enlighten the public and get it going. Today, we are going to speak to one of its pioneers in the country, Soulstack. As the tech branch of the initiative, Soulstack deals with e-waste through two unique ways. What are they? Its founder, Raj Ridvan Singh, is here to provide you with the answers.
Souls 24/7 is an award-winning humanitarian organization. We focus in four key areas: education, technology, mental health, and also in renewable energy. So we have various nationwide programs in these four areas. And our whole idea is to champion or to fight poverty, or we say, we won't stop until it's over, with over in the spelling of poverty. Poverty is such a big issue, and it encompasses pretty much everything. These are four areas that my team and I have developed expertise in, and these are areas that we feel for youth, for young people, not youth anymore, but for young people, this is an area that we can get involved in and truly contribute and make a difference, because a lot of young people do not get involved in these areas besides tech. But when you talk about education, mental health, and renewable energy, it's not common for youth or for young adults to get involved in this.
All right. Okay. So let's talk about Soulstack. Why did you decide to start this offshoot of Souls 24/7?
Sure. So a bit of history. So we started in Cambodia, and I remember this was about 18 years ago, when we had the first computer literally in a little tiny office that we had in our home office in Cambodia. And the students would come around and they would look at us, look at this machine, switch on. So I was a computer systems engineer, right? So I've been doing computers since 98. But going to Cambodia and then seeing all these students just look in, they're just mesmerized, like, what is this? That really sort of sparked a bulb in my head that said, wow, there's so many young people and so many youth in poor countries that actually do not have any access or have no idea about computing. This is about 18 years ago. And that really started the idea where I was like, so besides English, which is what we champion, I was like, we need to bring computing to these underserved communities. But as you know, computers are very expensive. And generally, donors prefer to donate food. They prefer to donate money, you know, first aid. But when it comes to computers, that's something that they're very reluctant to do. So that's one. The second thing is, we realized, and this is actually a great survey, so there's a survey done globally about what do NGOs or what do social enterprises really need. So everyone thought it would be food, volunteers, money, but the number one list was computers. And this was something that, well, we understand, because without a computer, you're unable to work. Today, without a digital device, you're unable to actually live like a normal person. Imagine life without your smartphone or your tablet. And yet, you know, you have 10 million Malaysians who do not have access to computers at home. And this, we felt, was a big challenge, one third of our population.
And that's how Soulstack was born, right?
Yes. And also, when we look at the environment, so we Malaysians are very now familiar with the concept of plastic waste, rubbish, because we can visually see it, right? It looks unpleasant. But we have no idea what happens to our digital device when it leaves our hands, right? So the latest iPhone, latest Samsung comes out, we go crazy, we want to buy the latest laptop. But then what happens to the old ones? You know, and many times we have no idea where these devices go. And the bigger challenge that we felt was they actually don't realize. So when you ask an average Malaysian, so what do you think happens to your device once it's done, right? Everyone's, oh, they're going to sell it in Lauyat. Oh, they're going to go sell it. That's nonsense, because if a device is more than 4, 5, 6 years, even others won't buy it. Then it goes into landfills. Then it goes into our environment. And it's hazardous materials. It's hazardous waste. And it's far, far worse for the environment than plastic. And yet we have no association to the thing that is the most intimate to us, which is our digital device.
So where should they go then, if that's the case?
Well, they should come to us to donate their computers, to sort of leave it over in our offices. We have 2 collection points. But essentially, they should look for responsible recyclers who take in e-waste. There are more and more organizations actually now, more and more social enterprises. And I would say the biggest one is Senviro. They are the ones who responsibly recycle e-waste. So they should look, and a simple Google search and you will find a number of locations to go and discard your digital waste.
Okay, so digital waste, e-waste, what is it exactly? Are we referring to only digital devices or any electrical appliances in our house? Must it be electronical in nature? Or
yeah.
Can it also be electrical and whatnot, right? So maybe you can help give us a definition of e-waste.
Sure. So e-waste is very broad. It's anything that has an electrical component. So whether it's a computer, a fridge, a TV, an old mouse, cables, wires, these are all defined as e-waste. It is not just digital. In Solstec, because we are trying to give digital devices, or what we say, one man's waste is another man's treasure, we're trying to take these devices and give them a second lease of life. But e-waste in general includes everything. Even your fan, your old washing machine, you know, your fridge, these are all e-waste.
Some of you might be wondering why we need to recycle e-waste separately from regular waste. Here's Raj again with the answer.
Because the process to recycle it is different. You need to actually have proper machines to actually separate the various elements within the device. Within e-waste, you have plastic, which is usually the housing of the device. You have the different elements or different minerals within. So you've got the motherboard, you've got the circuits, you've got the transformers, you've got batteries. Also, a lot of devices come with built-in batteries. All of these have separate processes for recycling.
Yeah, and you can't just simply throw them away just like that, right?
Yes. I mean, you shouldn't. Unfortunately, in Malaysia, we do, but we shouldn't. And we really need to think very carefully, because we're hitting about 40 million tons now, and very, very soon. And that's equivalent to about 4 million in just in computers alone a year. Mm. And this is getting troubling. I mean, think about it, right? A lot of people upgrade their devices every 2 years now. You know, you've got the people who are the young ones, especially, who have money and they go crazy with the latest phones that come out. But this is a problem.
So in Solstec, I understand that you have 2 ways of approaching it. So maybe you can break it down for us.
Sure. So when I say 2 ways, one is, first, we take the device and we analyze, right? So we take your computer, we take your laptop, your desktop, we analyze, does it work? Or can we take parts of it to build a working computer? So that's the first process. But then once that's done, and let's say, so computer A comes in, A, does it work? Yes. Can it be salvaged? Can it be saved? Yes. Now, if it cannot be saved, it cannot be salvaged, then what we do is we put it into our recycling pot, which is then where we separate the elements, and then we recycle it responsibly.
Okay, so do you do the separation yourself?
Yes.
You have to train people to do it?
No. I mean, yes, we train our people, but it's not rocket science. It's not difficult. All we do is we just take out the plastics, the metals, and the actual electronic waste.
Okay, so how do you determine whether a product is still usable or not usable? Especially when it comes to, like, for example, let's pick an old laptop, an old computer, right?
Correct.
Do you look at the computer and say if it's usable, but if it runs like an old OS that is no longer relevant but still usable, do you then still consider it good, or do you then think that, okay, maybe it's worth disposing?
Right, so this is another thing that most people don't realize. Computers from even as old as, say, 15 years ago can still be used today. Because what does the general person use a computer for, right? You would say docs, sheets, slides, or Microsoft Word, Excel, PowerPoint. And primarily now, with everything being online, the internet, you don't need high speeds to process any of these things. Even the computers from 15 years ago, the Pentium 4s, even Pentium 3s, can still work fine for those processors. So what we do is, the first thing we do is we take a computer, we analyze it. We have a server where we plug it in, because the first thing we do when we get a device is, if it works, is data protection. Because most people are very concerned, what happens to all my data on my hard disk? Because most Malaysians already know a simple format does not erase your data. It's still there sitting on the hard disk, right? Or your memory if it's a phone. So we go through a process where it can take between 4 to 16 hours just to format or erase multiple cycles, multiple layers of your device, so that your data is completely erased and safe. Then the second thing we do is we check the parts. We make sure that it's functioning, it's working. We have to clean it up, or we have to replace parts, you know. And then the third thing is we install. We do two things. We're a Microsoft registered refurbisher. So if the computer is good enough to handle Windows 10, then we put in Windows 10. But if the computer is a bit old, then we would put, and this is also what we do for a lot of our community centers, we put in Lubuntu, which is an open source software OS. It's lightweight, virus-free, and it's super simple, because really what people do is they go click on Google Chrome anyways. And within Google Chrome, you have all your apps, your docs, your sheets, your slides, your presentations, your Gmail. And that's primarily what people use their computers for. So primarily we get full computers or laptops. Recently we get quite a lot of laptops. People finally are able to let go of their old laptops, because previously it's always the hand-me-down, right? But even young people don't want old laptops anymore, so we get quite a number of laptops. With desktops, we also traditionally we get full sets, even including the mouse, the keyboard, the power cable. But we also get a lot of corporates just giving us their monitors. You know, when they upgrade to nicer, fancier monitors, they give us, and that's really awesome for us. And once we get this, so let's say we get a monitor from one person or one company, and we get, say, a bunch of CPUs, right? So with the system units, what we do is then we match it together. So traditionally, that word is called a clone computer. Mm. So we are making lots and lots of clone computers, and that's truly the process that we go through. So let's say even someone gives us a computer and they think it's not working, but maybe sometimes it's just the RAM. But because we have old parts, we just replace the RAM and boom, it's working and it's perfect. Or sometimes it's a simple cable. So that's how we do it.
Mm. Is there a standard or a benchmark that you put when it comes to receiving all these old parts? And I mean that, say, for example, if you receive an old CRT monitor, will you still refurbish that, or will you dismiss and throw
it? No, we love CRTs, man. Because a monitor is a monitor. And you see, when you're talking about rural communities, you're talking about NGOs, they don't mind. Because what they really need is a computer. Now, would they prefer an LCD? Of course. But if we say, hey, all we have is a CRT, they're completely fine with that. So yes, we take CRTs. We take pretty much any computer as long. So we have sort of a benchmark where we say not older than 10 years old. And most corporates and most donors, they give us devices that are a lot more than 10 years old. We do have, I would say, less than 10%, which is older. And this is then when we recycle it.
All right. That's the refurbishing initiative. What about the recycling part? If, let's say, the products that you receive are not usable anymore, how do you exactly recycle them?
So recycling is a business, as you would know. So what we would do is we would recycle it and we would generate income. And from the money that we make from these old parts, by selling it to the responsible recyclers, like Sunviro being the biggest, we would then use that to either continue funding the operations or to help us buy new parts.
Mm. What Soulstack is doing is not limited to just receiving all these products, right? It's also about educating the public as well, right? So what do you do on that end?
So exactly, it's, you know, so the refurbishing is one part of it. The sexy part about the refurbishing, which is what we call PHP, Poor Help Poor, and I'll explain that concept. So the students, so we have our Academy of Innovation, right? So our students, who are primarily Orang Asli and Sabahan youth, SPM leavers, they are the ones who are refurbishing it for us, right? And it's part of their learning process. So they are part of the 18-month program with us. They're learning English, coding, solar, and computing. So they refurbish these computers. So that's the second coolest thing, where they are learning that they can take these old devices and they can do something really good with it. The third part is we also have a lot of volunteers come in, and we try very hard to promote. So we've been doing this now close to 5 years. We've been trying to promote the understanding of e-waste. E-waste has probably only became a kind of a buzzword in the past 6 to 12 months. But a lot of people actually had no idea when we started 5 years ago that this was a challenge and a problem. So that the raising awareness, we work with some universities, we try to do campaigns. But again, we're just scratching the surface. You know, there's, you know, it's a huge problem. There's a lot to do. And yet the awareness is so low, because unlike plastic or rubbish or even food waste, which has smell and is unsightly, computers doesn't have that effect, that emotional effect on people. But yet, if people could see that the hazardous materials going into the ground and how it's going to ruin it for the future generations and just for the environment and even the water tables, I think then people will start realizing, like, wow, we got to really think about this. Because in Japan, they have great consciousness about e-waste. Because as much as they're the biggest digital producer before Korea came and kicked their ass, was, but the people there are so aware and so conscious of the hazards that come with e-waste.
Mm. Do you think that this is an exclusively Malaysian problem?
I would say it's a 99% of the world problem. Besides Japan and Scandinavian countries, the rest of the world just doesn't give a damn. From what we've seen, you know, there are companies, big companies who try, but again, they don't necessarily know where the computers go. Mm. You know, there's only 3 registered refurbishers in Malaysia for computers, right? But there are hundreds of companies taking these computers. How they erase the data, how they recycle, no one really knows, but no one really cares. It's the same with trash, right? Once the trash man comes and take your trash away, you don't really care whether he recycles it responsibly, whether he disposes it responsibly. That's another issue. Recycling is one part, but are you also disposing responsibly?
That was Raj Ridvansingh, founder of Soulstack and Souls24/7, a social enterprise that aims to empower the less privileged communities. And as you've heard just now, he's here this week to tell us the importance of managing our e-waste responsibly. After this, Raj is going to focus on how we can cultivate this culture, beginning with education. I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and this is I Love KL on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. I'm Hanif Baharuddin. This week, we're focusing our spotlight on e-waste and its importance to the society. We're joined by Raj Ridvansingh from Souls24/7, a humanitarian organization that aims to empower the less fortunate. One of the ways they go about doing this is through Soulstack, a branch of Souls24/7 that collects e-waste and either recycle them or refurbish them to be distributed to the less privileged. The responsibility of dealing with e-waste lies on the shoulders of everyone and not just bodies like Soulstack or the authorities. We all need to play our part, but with the level of general awareness being so low, one has to wonder whether we're just ignorant and refuse to be accountable to the products that we have beyond using them. Raj is of the opinion that it all starts with education.
For me, it's the education system, right? At schools, we're not taught. It's as simple as that. At schools, we're taught not to waste water. Right? At home, the mom says, hey, finish your food, don't waste food, because, you know, a poor kid in Africa doesn't have enough food. So we understand food waste. You know, we have all these, like, you know, Bersihkan the river and all these things. We have all these campaigns, and that's why we understand the need to be clean, to be orderly, to clear our trash. But when it comes to e-waste, there's just very little to no education at the school level. So what do you expect the population to be aware about when we don't talk? I mean, I'll tell you this, this is even more weird. More Malaysians are more aware about the hazards of the palm oil plantations because of the haze than they know about e-waste. But that is seasonal, once a year, thankfully not every year now, and that's just for a short time. E-waste is every single day, 40 million tons, and it's growing. People are saying it's going to grow up to 120 million tons. Where is this thing going? And with that, why is the awareness not there? Because, you know, it's not sexy, it's not cool. You can't see it. You can't really touch it. And this is what I always tell people. You know, our most important thing is that smartphone, that laptop, we're so attached. We did our studies on it. We got graduated. We made our wedding cards on it. We did everything. We probably found our boyfriend or girlfriend on it. So it's the most intimate thing to us. And yet, when it comes to disposing it, we have least concern.
Who are other stakeholders that should be responsible in this initiative, in educating the public?
Well, I think the first prerogative or the primary responsibility should be on the schools, on the Ministry of Education. They need, because this is where we disseminate and we teach our children. This is where we tell people. The second, I would say, is on the manufacturers themselves. So something very cool that used to happen about 50, 60 years ago when they wanted people to recycle the glass, they would give you, in US and Europe, they give you 5 cents for every bottle because A, they figured from a financial point of view, it makes sense, but B, it's also the waste, you know. So manufacturers themselves should educate people. So the Apples, the Samsungs, the Dells, the IBMs, they should actually be doing a lot more to educate people about the e-waste. But there is a reason they don't do it. Because if people truly knew the hazards of e-waste, there might be a reluctance to buy the digital device to begin with, you know. And this is why there's no incentive. But if there was a buyback scheme, you know, which some phone companies have, then they would be incentivized. Unfortunately, most of the people in the world, we only function on incentive. So if you can incentivize it, then they are willing to do it. If they can get some money or get some points or get some cookies, I don't know, then they would do it. But if not, they don't. And I also think the media plays a part where the media is entirely now digital dependent, right? You go to any media company, any media house, there is not a single one that is able to operate without a digital device, right? From the microphones to the computers to the everything. They also need to play a part in because that's the number one thing they consume, right? Digital or electronic stuff. They need to raise awareness. They need to start telling people and educating people because without electronics, without digital stuff, there is no media. We're done with this whole print and old school way of handing out now everything. I mean, you know, that's why we could be here today.
Having dealt with the communities who don't have the means and exposure to the devices that we sometimes take for granted, Raj Ridvan Singh is able to paint us the picture of the digital divide.
Oh, it's increasing. The digital divide, and this is what people don't want to accept, the digital divide between the urban or, you know, the people who have it and the people who don't. I mean, 10 million Malaysians don't have access to computers, right? This is a fact. 10 million Malaysians have access to water, electricity and roads, right? Now, there were great initiatives by the government. You had the One Bestari, but it was a massive screw up, right? Go to any school in Malaysia and they won't have proper internet connection, right? They won't have proper working computer labs. So this is really the challenge. Then how do you want all of us Malaysians to be equal, to participate equally in the economy when what is the first thing you need to do when you apply for a job is write your CV? You see anyone writing with a typewriter? No. You need a computer. They don't know how to use it, right? What's the first thing you need to do when you want to communicate, when you want to participate, knowing things in technology, reading the news? They need access. And when you don't teach them and you don't give them access, then what happens? There will be this divide. Now, we've only scratched the surface. We've only distributed in the past 5 years 3,500 to 4,000 working units. But I'll tell you a joke. We, a social enterprise, tiny little nobodies, gave more computers to NGOs and the poor than all the tech companies combined, more than Dells, IBMs, whoever, you name it, Samsungs, Apples, right? But yet, people go crazy for their products. But we've actually donated more than those people combined. How? Because we realize that there is a problem. But for us, it's not a business. It's a necessity. You know, you had this whole scandal of that one Malaysia laptop. It was horrible crap quality going out. And then even that, because the poor didn't know how to use, which is the second problem. First is giving them access. The second is educating them how to use it. This is where our schools completely failed. Right? So fine, you know, One Bestari Net, YTL networks, whatever, like they want to say the infra is there. Where's the education? Where is the actual delivery to the people? How are you going to teach a kid how to use the internet if there is no internet connection in the school? How are you going to solve that problem? How are you going to give them access? So that's why we need to really work. And this is why I'm very excited about, you know, what the minister, Dr. Mazli, says. He wants to address the technology problem, right? He wants to bring this to the schools because he realizes, the new government realizes the need for it. In fact, without social media, without the digital world, there is no new government. We would have continued the way we have for the past 60 years. Now, we need to bring that to more and more communities. We need to bring that down to the kampongs. you know, and it's not just giving them a phone. It's no more just SMS. You know, it's literally telling them the value. You can see the world. You don't have, you may not have the money to travel, but you can see the whole world through the internet. You can travel through Google Earth. You can watch videos. You can see. You can study. And they don't have access. And that's why I'm really excited about what YB Gobind said, where he's saying now he's going to make internet cheap. And he's bringing our speeds like 10 times, you know. And that to me is amazing, because by doing that, you're automatically going to upgrade the whole country to a level where we all now have high speed. And this will branch out into many areas we won't realize. Internet cafes now will have better speed. People will be more inclined. And then when the infrastructure reaches throughout the country, because more people are going to demand, right? It's 70 ringgit, it's affordable, or it's 50 ringgit or 30 ringgit. They're going to say, hey, I want. And I think that's why I'm very, very excited about the future. You know, I think the new government understands the need for it. I think they need to speak to more people like us to give them a sort of understanding of the realities in the rural areas. But we're very, very excited. And we have actually reached out to YB Gobind and MCMC to offer our services.
That's great, because you're there on the ground, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. You touched on a very important point just now. You said that giving them computers is one thing, but teaching them how to use it is another, right? So what do you guys do on your end to help educate these right. people that you give all these refurbished laptops and computers to?
So we actually pre-install them with a whole bunch of softwares, which is all available offline. So there's entire Wikipedia, Scratch, coding softwares, gamings, all these things which is available offline. So in all these rural areas that we distribute to Orang Asli villages, Sabah, even throughout parts of Malaysia, they can all use the computers. We show them how it's done, and it's not difficult. The beautiful thing about teaching computing, you don't have to teach. It's all about facilitation, which means you just show. I just show you where to click, what to do. And intuitively, the way that a lot of developers develop stuff, it's all intuitive, right? Why people love the iPhone, because it's intuitive. And just with a few hours of facilitation and showing, you can get them to adopt, to learn. So giving them the right programs is important. We're one of the Google education partners in Asia, one of the 7 Google for education partners in Asia. So we also introduce computer science in a basic way. So these are ways that we want to push this technology. I mean, I graduated as a systems engineer at the age of 17 because I realized the power of technology and how it's changing the world. Today, all the youngest billionaires, all the top people who are young and super duper rich, everyone technology-based. Take Bill Gates, Elon Musk, any of them, they all build tech companies, right? The young billionaires, like you've got Mark Zuckerberg, you've got the Snapchat dude, you've got all these people. It's all tech-based, Grab tech-based, because young people realize that value. But again, if you analyze, these were young people who came from either rich families or upper middle income, not poor. Show me one app that is now a unicorn that was built by a poor kid. And you don't see that. And even the big apps in Malaysia, it's all the upper middle income, because those parents saw the value and sent the kids. And this is what I'm trying to push, even with the government. I'm like, coding, forget the word coding, computer science is just like math. It's fundamental. It's necessary. You need to give this to the masses. You really want a vision 2020? You really want to develop Malaysia? We have the tools. We have the ability today, way more than 20 years ago. Technology can help us reach vision 2020 in 5 years, 3 years for that matter. It's not like before where, you know, it's really hard. You got to do engineering for you. People can learn tech in 3, 6, 12 months. Old people, young people, kids, anyone. It has become that big. You know, there's all these amazing online resources which poor people, you know, we know about Khan Academy, Coursera, Udemy and all this, right? All they know is Facebook, YouTube and porn, right? Now, which is fine, but you don't learn from Facebook, you don't learn from YouTube. Most people who watch, the average person who watch YouTube, they don't even know how to search, how to build something, how to find. They don't even know that. They know how to just watch their favorite sitcoms or stuff like that, you know? And that simple education, teaching them simple search tools, 1 hour lesson opens up their mind, you know. And we're not even talking about e-usahawan, which is another great idea. There's all these amazing things that people can do using social media, for example, for activism, for business. I'm not even talking about that yet. I'm just talking about the basics. And even there, we're not there.
Mm. Do you think that denying communities access to digital commodities denies them what some now consider a basic human right?
100%. I think it is cruel for us not to consider the need. To me, you ask a kid, right? You want water or iPad? Guess what he'll pick? And we say water is a basic commodity, right? A basic necessity, a human right, digital technology is now. Because if you don't give them access, it's like not giving them access to electricity. Electricity opened the world to engineering. It opened the world to transport. It opened the world. But digital transformation, digital education opened the world to limitless possibilities. And I think it's cruel if we do not really fight for it, you know. And it's not like, hey, let's go build more roads. Let's go build more infrastructure. Let's build another mega tower. I'm like, hey, dude, why don't we now focus on how do we really bring the infrastructure and the technology and the training to the schools? Can you imagine there's about 9, 10 million students in school? Imagine if we made that our focus, that we want every Malaysian child, just like how every Malaysian child has access to water, to food, to schools, which was a great thing Malaysia did, right? During Tun Mahathir's time, he wanted to make sure every child, it's illegal not to send your child to school in Malaysia, right? Great. Now, we got to bring technology with that same passion, that same goal. How do we bring it to every school and stop making it about politics and stop awarding these contracts to big guys who are already so rich? Try to solve the problems and really bring proper. And bro, there's so many solutions. There are great tech companies. There's all kinds of networks available. Now we're no more talking 4G. It's 5G, WiMAX. There's all these things. We can do it.
Okay, important stakeholders aside, what can Malaysians, ordinary Malaysians, do to be more involved or be more aware of this issue, especially e-waste?
The first is they should dispose responsibly. I told you, simple Google search. If you've got a phone, that means you know how to use Google. Go and find out where to dispose nearby, because again, we are Malaysians, we want convenience. And there are a number of organizations actually out there where you can dispose. Number two, donate to us your old devices if they're still working, because we can help them reach communities that won't have it. And number three, raise awareness. Talk about it. Talk about it with your friends in the mama in the office. Hey, bro, do you know where your iPhone goes? Your Samsung, your laptop, where does it go? You know, and I think that conversation needs to happen. And you know, we're the kind where we talk, and eventually if it goes viral enough, then people will start taking action.
Okay, so if listeners want to get involved in your program, where can they go to? How do they get in touch with you?
Mm-hmm. So the easiest way is to go on our website, which is solstech247.org/solstech, or just Google Solstech, SOLS TECH. They can find us on Facebook as well. All our locations, we have two collection points. The address is there. The pins are there. You just click on it and come and donate. Numbers are there. So it's quite straightforward.
Do they have to do anything specifically to these devices before they go to you?
No, nothing. Just pass it to us and we'll take care of it. Yeah, and if there's a big corporate and the big companies, and I hope there are, then for anything that's more than 10 devices, we will actually come and pick it up for free. So just get in touch and just say we have 10, 15, 20 computers or hundreds. In fact, we have good partners that donate to us. You know, we've got DG, JTI. These are big multinationals who've seen the value, even BAT, you know. Although it's funny, they're smoking, they're all cigarette companies, but they take waste very seriously. You know, we've got really good partners. Even DG gives us a lot of computers, like in the hundreds every year. And they all see the value. Hong Leong has been our biggest partner as a bank, right? And they're careful about the data and they give it to us. So my point being that we hope that we can work with big corporates. We hope we can work with agencies. And if they have 10 or more devices, we will come and pick it up for free all over Malaysia. Except Sabah, Sarawak for now.
Okay, and which communities have benefited so far from this initiative?
I would say, wow, we've donated to orphanages, a lot of Rumah Anak Yatim, a lot of NGOs. So we are the largest computer donors to Orang Asli villages throughout the country, including Sabah. Basically, just the entire social sector. We give anyone and everyone when we had support. Unfortunately, at the moment, the funding for the free donations is run out. So now we distribute it at a very reduced price. About 250 ringgit a computer. So NGOs can still afford it. But we're also looking for more sponsors. So if there's corporates who want to come on board, Hong Leong was great. For 4 years, they supported it. Of course, with any corporate, every time they will find a new direction, and we're grateful nonetheless. But we are also looking for partners who want to partner with us, so big companies who really want to champion e-waste.
All right. Thank you very much, Raj.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
That was Raj Ritvansingh, the founder of Solstech, a movement that turns e-waste from trash into treasure and educates the public on the importance of doing so along the way. Solstech is also the offshoot of Souls 24/7, a social enterprise that empowers the marginalized and the less fortunate in our society. To find out more about the good work that they're doing, you can visit its website at souls247.org.
And that marks the end of this week's episode of I Love KL. If you miss any part of the show, you can check out the podcast at bfm.my/ilovekl or download our latest app via Google Play or the App Store. Also, follow the station on Twitter at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharuddin, and you have been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.